Spencer's gone to get technical help.
Oh. Technical difficulties.
But you can start this meeting without him. He's just...
Oh, we can?
Yeah.
Do we have Ryan?
Ryan is just being admitted from the waiting room. You're good to go.
Okay, Ryan, can you hear us?
Yeah, sorry about my tardiness. I had to run up to Cannon Beach today.
Okay, we're ready to go if you want to start the meeting.
Sure, this is to call the Newport Urban Renewal Agency meeting to order for Monday, November 15th, 2021. Peggy, roll call, please.
Paul?
Here.
Oteo?
Here.
Jacoby?
Here.
Gobo?
Here.
And Sawyer?
Here.
So we have several things to talk about here, and I'm going to be going off the, my picture will be disappearing, but you'll still be able to hear me. So that'll be back up fairly shortly. But we have a number of things that we want to review as part of the urban renewal. First thing is an update on South Beach, and I'll turn it over to Derek to initiate.
Now, shouldn't we approve the consent calendar first?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Or see if there's public comment.
Public comment, consent calendar.
Ryan, go ahead for the public comment, the consent calendar.
Yeah, I was waiting for my opportunity there. Hang
there's
on, I'm loading
comment.
The agenda real quick. Okay, Peggy, item number three, please.
Item number three is the consent calendar, and the consent calendar consists of approval of the minutes of the meeting of September 7th of 2021 and approval of the minutes of the meeting of September 20th, 2021.
Do I have a motion?
I move to approve.
Second.
Oh, second.
Okay, the motion was approved by Councilor Goebel, seconded by Councilor Jacoby. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next item is Executive Director's Report, Spencer.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Derek without any further ado here so that we can try to get back on schedule. Derek?
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development. We have Emily and Lorelei with Eco Northwest here to present the final draft of the South Beach US 101 Refinement Plan. And so they're going to kind of walk through that. If the agency, after you, this is a chance for you to ask questions of them. I know you've had a copy of the report in your packet, have a chance to pan through that. The plan would be, after this report's finalized, then we will bring forward a 14th amendment to the South Beach Urban Renewal Plan, possibly the final one, that would incorporate the recommended projects. And then this refinement plan would then be an appendices to the Urban Renewal Plan. And then we would get moving on this final round of projects. So with that, Emily, Lorelei.
Great, I'm gonna kick us off. Thanks for screen sharing there, Emily. And thank you all for having us here tonight. It's exciting to be at this place after 9 months or so of pretty intensive public engagement and analysis to have a final draft plan to share with you all. Again, just as a very brief reminder, the purpose of this plan is to help to figure out how to prioritize the remaining urban renewal dollars for expenditure in the South Beach area. And as Derek said, then to make a final amendment to, hopefully final amendment to the urban renewal plan to move forward with the projects that are in here. So Emily, if you can go to the next slide. Tonight, our plan is to give you a pretty quick flyover of the final plan. We've been in front of you a number of times, so hopefully there's nothing in here that's too surprising. Have a discussion about the final project prioritization, and then talk a little bit about the specific next steps for the 35th Street site, which is going to need to go out to solicitation to identify a developer. Is it just me, or did our screen go black?
Yeah, it's back.
Okay, now it's back. All right. Good thing I had remembered what that third bullet was to keep talking. the next, Emily, are you okay here?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So can you go to the next slide? Thank you. Just a reminder of where we've been, a bunch of existing conditions work in the early part of this project, which we shared with you. We've identified some initial kind of concepts for projects, completed a code audit to look at what some of the code and land use barriers might be to development in the area that aligns with the vision for it, and then went through a prioritization process, and all of that feeds into the report that we'll be presenting. Project. Emily, I'll hand it to you for that.
Yeah. So the document that's in your packet is the kind of serves as the summary of a lot of all the work that you've probably seen before and exists in the appendices. So the appendices are pretty long. The opportunities and constraints report was the first document that you all saw. Then there's a document that talks through the way that we evaluated the projects, and we ran them through several criteria, and we've done a couple surveys with the community, and those are also included in the appendix, as well as the detailed code audit from JET Planning. Our community engagement process was pretty robust, I would say, for COVID times. We did 18 stakeholder interviews. We had two focus groups, and we did two surveys. The first survey had more responses than the second survey, but I think we had around 150 responses to the second one. We also talked with property owners and institutions and community groups throughout the process. Our process considered the original plan's objectives, which you see here, and we also updated, kind of given that so much time has passed between the original adoption of the plan and all the conditions have changed in the area, we created a set of new investment priorities for 2021 that emphasized priorities like a sense of place and improving connectivity, especially for people that are traveling through the area, not by car, but also by car. And also thinking about development that would meet the needs of the people who are using the area now, especially the workers that are in the area. And a lot of our projects are thinking through how to overcome market and development barriers on the sites, and which also includes some of the infrastructure barriers at the airport. So I learned a lot about South Beach through this process. I learned that the area is home to some really special institutions, the combination of which is probably not found anywhere else, at least in Oregon, if not nationwide, and that those different institutions have goals to grow and to expand their reach and to bring in new students and visitors, and that this plan had a chance to capitalize on those on all of those institutions' goals. And there was a lot of hope that I heard in conversations with people. And it was just a really great experience talking to everybody through this plan. I think some of the opportunities that I saw was to really create a cohesive district in the area with a unique identity that people would know about South Beach as a place, like they know other districts in Newport, and really improve the experience through investments like the cohesive bike path loop. The constraints that we saw specifically at the airport trying to get development to happen was a lack of infrastructure, but also there's market barriers at the airport, like what kind of development is going to happen there given current construction costs and demands. And then also resiliency was a huge theme throughout our project, which we didn't, I mean, there are projects that are included in the refinement plan that directly address resiliency pieces, and we tried to think about resiliency in a lot of ways. For example, around food on the 35th site, like how can you be able to provide food to the area, especially if the bridge were to break down, like that there would be a grocery store and that people aren't having to travel so much to go far away. And then also constraints are around connectivity, and the projects that we've identified in this plan seek to overcome the connectivity, especially for people not in cars. So JET Planning conducted a land use code audit. There's an exhibit in the plan, exhibit 3, is like a one pager that summarizes her recommendations. I would say the top two things that came out of that code audit for me was the potential to rezone specific sites at the 35th Gateway site and also at 40th to better align with the overall goals of the area. They're currently kind of out of sync the zoning. And then the other piece is annexation, which is included in Project B in the plan. About a quarter of the land within the district is not in the city, and that presents some huge challenges, as you know, to providing services to that area. So we've included a specific project that tries to address that. And Elizabeth Decker from JET has presented, or I don't think she has met with the Planning Commission, and then Derek has also discussed these recommendations with the Planning Commission. And so there's some detailed pieces coming out of it as well. So we, as part of this project, we created an investment framework. This project really specifically thinks about projects that the agency would undertake, not necessarily its partners leading the projects. By the end of 2025, the projects must be awarded. We have two investment areas, but really kind of that morphs through the end of the project. We've been thinking about it as one, but really the peninsula and US 101 and the airport. And then up to $9 million in project costs. And I'll cover that. I just want to rehash our conversation from last meeting one more time. And then we ran all the projects through some specific criteria. Our project evaluation process included the criteria evaluation. We vetted projects, pretty much every project, very specifically with the public. And we also looked at some planning level cost estimates, which came to a final prioritized project list. And those criteria included the time is of the essence criteria, that the project needed to be awarded by 2025, that it didn't require a substantial amendment because of that timing issue. Did it align with the original plan's objectives? Does it advance the 2021 priorities? And does the community support it? Wanted to rehash this conversation, which we had with you, I believe on September 20th, where we talked about the financial scenarios. You had two scenarios. One was to pay as you go. So basically the money that came in through 2025, you could use that to pay for projects. The second scenario, which it sounded like we all wanted to move forward with, was a scenario in which you would collect an additional 2 years of increments and start borrowing against that in 2025, 26, so that you could kind of maximize the dollars that you'd be able to spend, because there are some uncertainties in the project costs that we found, just given, like, you're going after a grant, for example, for the pipeline. And if you don't get that grant, you might still want to use these dollars to pay for that pipeline because it's so critical. And so having that additional up to $9 million number gives you that flexibility. Just wanted to, and also just underscore that those last 2 years, the 2026 and 27 collection, means that that money would not be going back to the taxing districts until 2028. We did a second survey, and I wanted to cover some of the responses on those. We had 154 responses. It was open for about a month, and it was really focused on the specific projects. So we gave them a budget. We said what percent of the money should be spent across the different kind of project categories. Resiliency was really important to people, and there are some projects in our slate that cover resiliency, and also bike and ped pathways. And that it was actually surprising to me through this process how important that network is to people in South Beach. On the commercial development, we talked specifically about which use exactly would you like to see on the 35th site, and the grocery store came out ahead, as well as micro restaurants or food carts. People want lots of different options for food. Right now, they don't feel like they have that. And I would say the general merchandiser did not come out ahead in terms of priorities. So this can inform the next steps when you're thinking about the request for qualifications that you all would be putting out for this site. You can think about how you'd prioritize the different responses that would come back. We also talked through, and we went through the three concepts in our last meeting. And in the survey, we showed them those three concepts and asked which one they preferred. They liked number two, which was the food destination. It looks like this. With the small grocery store and the micro restaurant pods. So that's helpful, I think, also when you're thinking through your request for qualifications. And then the final project list. So this was kind of what I was getting at with the up to $9 million. You can see the ranges on some of these, depending on some additional work that you all have to do. Well, not you, but your city and and potential consultants would have to do to try to get at what is the specific cost of some of these investments. We got to planning level, now you get to need to get down to more specific ones. And also it just gives you a little bit of leeway up to the 9 million. So some of these will come in at the low end, some will come at the high, depending on the studies that you need to do. And I think that's it. We're moving into next steps next. Were there any questions on this project list while we have it up, or do we want to complete the presentation? Maybe complete the presentation and then come back. All right, Lorelei.
All right, next steps. So specifically related to the 35th Street site, it will require a partnership with a developer to move that forward. And to get there, the idea is to do some additional outreach, especially to the surrounding properties. The existing buildings that are on the site need to be removed to make the site more attractive to a potential development partner. And then work toward the release of an RFQ, a request for qualifications, in 2022 that would identify the site constraints, some example concepts, and what the opportunity really looks like for partners. These are all covered through the work that we have done so far. So the content for the RFQ can largely be pulled from the work and analysis that we have done to date. Through that solicitation process, select a developer with whom to work, and the developer themselves will do the additional outreach needed to identify potential anchor tenants and to negotiate what those terms would look like. In an ideal world, we would see development by 2025. The timeline for going through the process of negotiating a development deal and identifying tenants and doing all the design work will take some time. So those are the specific next steps for the 35th site. We've also identified a set of next steps for each and every one of the other projects, and I'm not going to walk through them in detail right now. They're all up on the screen and they're also included in your packet. But the idea with this was to essentially create a work program for Derek's team to advance as we go through the remaining years of life of the Urban Renewal Agency and try to make it as much of a playbook as possible and provide as much detail as would be needed to keep everything moving so that we can make sure that these projects don't just have the funding, but have the sort of internal momentum around them to be able to move successfully to fruition. So that's it. I think now would be a good time to move to discussion and questions. And Derek, I'll look to you too if we need a formal action of any sort tonight to lead us through that.
I think general consensus on comfort level with a final report would suffice. Formal action would come in the amendment to the South Beach Urban Renewal Plan. But Lorelei, could you speak briefly about your thoughts or recommendations relative to positioning the 35th Street site and potentially or framing the agency's willingness to maybe reduce the value of that to attract the type of tenant we're looking for?
The value of the land?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the question, right? You have the value of the land that can be a really useful negotiating tool to attract a developer. And in particular, because some of the uses that we heard were really important to community members are expensive and do reduce the amount of developable acreage on the site, having some sort of public contribution on the table can be really helpful to attract a developer. Yeah. Additionally, it is a difficult time because there's such a shortage of labor and because there's so much uncertainty, especially in construction materials and construction costs. So leaving that on the table can help to keep a developer interested, even given all of that uncertainty. You should not commit, and I'm sure will not commit, to the full reduction in the value in the RFQ, but it's important to sort of set the expectations for the developer of what you might be willing to do and what those negotiations could look like, dependent upon the amount of public value that the developer is able to bring. Does that get at what you were hoping for there, Derek?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Can you take down the presentation so we can see each other, please?
Yeah.
Hey, Derek.
Yes.
Would it be beneficial to keep the property in public ownership and out the tax rolls for developer purposes, or is that a possibility?
It's a possibility. We actually had talked about, you know, it might be advantageous to frame the RFQ as a sale or a long-term lease. Different, you know, potential suitors may prefer a lease over acquisition. So I think it's reasonable in an RFQ to pitch both options and see what kind of responses you get.
I'm just talking about keeping the property off tax rolls, but I mean, the improvements of, I would hope would be taxed.
Well, right. So would the property. If we lease property that's being used for private purposes, that value is going to be taxed as well.
But it would still be under public ownership. That's what you were driving at, right, Dietmar?
Right. That's not an option, Spencer, to do that kind of a structure?
Well, no, we can do that type of a structure, but it doesn't relieve the property tax obligation because when we lease property to a private entity, that property then becomes taxable. But there may be other advantages for pursuing a lease versus selling the property.
Okay.
Cynthia, go ahead.
Okay. So I hear you telling us that we should not expect to have developers beating down our doors to build something there in the light of times with labor shortages, material shortages, perhaps. Am I correct in hearing you predict that?
I mean, what I will say, it is a very attractive site. Sorry, Emily, we're cutting each other off. You go ahead.
I did talk with probably 5 developers about the site that are working on similar projects throughout the state, and they had not heard of South, like they'd been to South Beach, but they'd never thought about it, you know, as a development prospect. And I think I got it on a few people's radars, and there are people that are saying, like, I'm kind of done working in the in the Willamette Valley. I'm interested in working on the coast. Like, I think you can get on the radar. I think the grocery store concept is not something that is going to be easy to make pencil, but is going to have outsized value for the community. So I think you should fight for it.
Yeah.
I got a question on demolition timelines for the buildings that are on the URA property. How many buildings need to be demolished and who would pay for the demolition? And when is the timeline to give notices of move out or tearing the building down? Like what's the time frame there?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that. We've been basically taking the rents we've been collecting over the years off of this property and putting them into a demolition fund. So we have more than adequate funds budgeted for demolition purposes. So that's a budgeted capital project, and we can take care of that. I think the trickier piece has to do with, I think we're getting to the point now where we're going to need to set some hard deadlines on South Beach Church to find an alternate location. They are continuing to work on it. I had a conversation with them again today. I periodically have conversations with them about this, but as we move into putting an RFQ together, we're going to be putting a schedule together, and that would seem to be a time for us to identify, you know, okay, this is a time horizon they need to be working with to transition out of that site.
Dean?
My question is similar to what Ryan was asking. I've seen some other projects in other communities where they level the property, evict people, and then the property sits for 2 to 3 years before anything happens. I would hate to see that here. I think with the South Beach Church as a tenant, and perhaps the warehouses too, to keep them going as long as we can, because obviously we get the income from it. But I would just hate to see that property, if we say you have to be out on the 1st of January, and then nothing happens for 3 to 4 years.
Dean, I think it's a fair point. I think you know, on the flip side of that coin, I think it's going to help South Beach Church to understand what some of these timelines are, so that they can move forward with their future plans at an alternative location. They've occasionally reached back to me and asked, you know, what's the where are you guys at on redevelopment of this property? So I think putting some dates out there, in the coming months, I think it's going to be helpful for all involved, and help them as they move forward.
Any more discussion on this item, or can we move on?
I think Dietmar's got his hand up.
Question, Ryan. I've had my hand up forever.
Great. Dietmar.
So, Derek, when we put together the package for the north end for the condo, for the apartment development, we forgave taxes for 10 years. Was that because they were a nonprofit, or is there some other reason why we can't do this on this particular property?
There was a specific property tax exemption program that's authorized by statute that we adopted locally. It's called a multiple unit property tax exemption. It's for multifamily projects that provide, some affordable housing. And that's what we adopted as a city. And that's why we were able to offer it in that case. And the way that worked was, that Surfview Village in that case had to show that their project would not otherwise pencil out without the 10-year property tax abatement. We don't have a similar tool for commercial per se, although, again, we have the value of the property that we can play around with a little bit.
And how do we develop that kind of a program? Is that something that can be developed by council and discussion?
Well, in terms of the value of the property or reducing potentially, that would be through
tax abatement.
Or tax forgiveness. A tax abatement like we did for the for the apartment project. Could we do it for a commercial development?
I guess only in so far as I believe it would be the city's property taxes potentially. We'd have to look into that. I mean, it'd be like something like what the Dalles did as part of a development agreement for Google, which was in the news recently. I mean, municipalities have that, but we only have control over our taxes, not the counties or the ports or so on and so forth. Their levies are what they are.
I understand that, but there still would be an incentive, right? In the city tax was forgiven for a number of years.
Sure, you bet. Mm-hmm.
Cynthia, please.
Okay, I'm not sure if this question fits into this section of our discussion, but I just wanted to know if anyone has heard if there's a post office for South Beach yet. Has anyone jumped in to have that happen, or could that be part of this plan?
Yeah, I've not heard of anyone jumping in to open a new post office in South Beach at this point. With conversations I had with post office probably a month ago or so, I don't know if anything's happened since that time. So,
okay, thank you.
CM?
Yeah, I totally forgot. I had two things. One, do you need us to be kind of directing in terms of how many months for South Beach? So if we said by March 31st, and then that's my first question. And then the second one is, my question to Emily, when you say grocery store might not pencil, is that because like you have contacts with potential grocers, but no one wants to come? Yeah, like I'm just trying to figure it out because for many, since the Vision 24, where people have just been talking about a Trader Joe's, and I know they're very particular about coming into communities where there's a certain number of people who have college degrees. I know that's like one of their criteria, right? So is that like part of it? I'm just asking because I know that that's been a part of this, the people have like dreamed that for Newport.
Yeah. I think some of the key things are you have an existing cluster of grocery stores that's like a little bit more than up to the north of town, like what you would need. And this area would kind of be all out on its own. So the way that grocery developers look at sites, that you would not have the rooftops to support a grocery store necessarily, like a larger grocery store, like a 30,000 square foot grocery store. But a smaller grocery store that had more grab and go foods that was kind of more like limited in its product selection is a more likely candidate for this site. But there's also not as many fresh foods up in Manzanita and Cannon Beach is like an example of one of those smaller grocery stores that could work here.
Yeah, Sam, to your question about schedule, I think what we would want to do is have a separate meeting with the Urban Renewal Agency to talk about a schedule for getting the RFQ on the ground. And as part of that, we can work in a discussion about a schedule for South Beach Church. I'd like the opportunity to talk some more with the church about exactly where they're at with their plans to move forward. And you know, we obviously want to look to see if we can get to a win-win there. And then, you know, bring back, you know, some thoughts for that follow-up meeting with you guys.
Beatrice? I'm just wondering, it was any suggestions on having like a commercial, but also like a mixed housing, like sometimes, you know, there's some places where they have a combination apartment plus, you know, commercial. Was a question like that or a suggestion on the plan? Because I'm thinking, you know, what Dietmar, he said, you know, about having the credits, you know, the 10-year, you know, like but I'm wondering, was it an idea about including maybe housing too?
I mean, Derek, I know you've been talking with some other people in the area about potential mixed-use development like that, but we were kind of understood that this was the idea was that this would be a commercial site. Given your tsunami hazard zone, I think there's a lot of limitations on what type of new residential could go in, but I think there would be a way to do that, maybe. Derek?
Well, certainly a proposer could bring up a concept where it would be residential over some sort of commercial first floor arrangement. We actually have the property owner on the other side, back behind Toyota of Newport, is thinking about some residential over medical office at that location. It's also right next to Safe Haven Hill, which is really close to that tsunami evacuation area. This particular site, 2.3 acres, right on the signal there, this has been really more about focus about getting services that the South Beach neighborhood and those just outside of South Beach, but south of the bridge, really would like to have, and thus avoid the need to drive over the bridge for everything.
Thank you.
Not off the table entirely. Like if there was a proposal, if there was someone, like it could be a mixed use.
Correct.
Any other questions or comments on this topic?
I think Jan has his hand up. Is that a hand up, Jan? You got your hand up. Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, I didn't have my hand up. I'm just listening.
You got a white hand up in your.
Oh, I think that's your cursor, Dietmar. If you move your mouse, it's good. I do that occasionally too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Okay. Okay, Peggy, 4C, please.
Yeah, just to conclude this discussion, the final list of projects, is everyone comfortable with that to proceed with? Thumbs up. Okay, so we will, that'll be our next. Next steps will be going into the approval processes to kind of wrap this process up. So,
okay, 4C is an update on street lighting for Berry Slip undergrounding.
Attached is a report from Assistant City Engineer Chris Janigo outlining the issues that have risen regarding the use of Shepherd's Hook type lights along Southeast Ferry Slip. And we wanted to have a discussion with the Urban Renewal District regarding this issue. And Chris, do you want to give a brief overview of the issues that we're running across from a design standpoint regarding this option? And then we'll have discussion on it.
Yeah, thank you, Spencer. I'll make it brief. Looking at the Shepherd's Hook, luminescence radius, or like the area that the light will impact, it doesn't create or impact the area that the acorn lights would provide, or the cobra-type lights, which is your pretty typical light that you see on telephone poles. And so looking at space requirements for using shepherd hooks with the multi-use path in the way on Ferry Slip Road compared to the amount of lights that would be required for acorn lights, it's our recommendation that we revert back to an acorn lighting plan for Ferry Slip Drive. And we've been in coordination with Central Lincoln PUD on alternate head types. They're still in a trial phase of, and they've just received some different head types that they're going to test out. Central Lincoln PUD has been in correspondence with us on with caps on the top of the lights to shield from upward casting light, so that light from the acorn is only projected downwards and out. And so that is a potential solution, which will also go towards the council's goals of being dark sky compliant. So if anyone has any questions.
Questions for Chris on that?
Yeah, when would the PUD be ready to make a recommendation on these acorn lights with a cap on the top? I mean, that's something we discussed at our meeting when we approved the other one, but they said they weren't available. So now all of a sudden they're available. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure when they're going to be able to give this confirmation if they work. So I do not have a timeline on that yet.
What's the timeline on putting the lights in?
We're looking for this spring going into our final phase three undergrounding project, spring and summer.
And then would you be hopeful that the PUD then would have that approved by then, or that recommended by then?
That is the goal, and the and we can still install the bases for the poles and prep the areas for these poles. Once they go through the trial period, testing the lights to make sure they work on the poles, there is a shipping commitment time, which I cannot yet say how long of a delay that would be if the city wanted to go that route.
I mean, that meridian light that, or cyclone light, or maybe that you show in the picture, that's a pretty good attractive alternate to the other one if the light pattern is so much better. And you're saying that you'd have to use twice as many lights for the other one as you would the acorn one?
I don't have the exact numbers on how many more, but yeah, it would be a lot more shepherd hooks. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head.
Thanks.
Hey, Chris, is there anything that you're asking us to do, or is this just more of an update item?
Yeah, it was pretty much an update item. We brought this to council previously, and there was direction to use the shepherd hook lights along Ferry Slip
Right. Inside
of the acorns. And so looking at it on kind of making a cost benefit analysis on it, it'd be better to go with these acorn lights on Ferry Slip for the cost. And if we can get the heads, they'll also achieve the same goal, which I think was what the council was looking for previously.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't be in favor of the acorns unless they can assure before ordering and the expenditure that they have that directional downward and that it works with a field test. You know, put one on one of the existing acorns and see how it looks to back up the paper diagram. So
yeah, I guess
we'll just wait for that.
Yeah, I think the time commitment, and Chris, you can elaborate a little bit on this, is the design for the placement of the poles has to be finalized so that we can kind of bid the process going forward. But what's the time frame for that, Chris?
We're pretty far along in the design. So I could see us being able to do the project in the early spring.
But when would you have to know for sure on the decision of the Shepherd's Hook versus the Acorn type light in order to get this out?
I'd have to double back to Central Lincoln PUD and get a timeline from them on if these caps will work. And if not, we'd be diverting to an alternate site layout for the Shepherd's Hooks.
Yeah. When are your design documents going to be completed?
The goal is this early spring, hopefully February.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of
that's the... Go ahead, please.
Yeah.
You know, I guess our overall goal was to have the lights go directionally down, and the capped helmets would do that. But most of the other lights in South Beach are the Shepherd's Hook, so it's not a very cohesive look. But if that's what we have to do, I guess that's what we have to do. But I just want to make sure the lights are directionally down.
And Central Lincoln PUD is they're about to place their the Acorn style lights on Highway 101. They've recently just finished installing most of the bases. Also on Ash Street off of Ferry Slip is also that style as well. So
I have another question.
Go ahead.
So Chris, what's the cost difference between the Shepherd Hook, assuming the council wants to continue that, versus the new Acorn one? Are you talking 100,000, 200,000 difference, or 30,000?
I would have to get back to you on that. I'm not certain on cost. Merely looking at preliminary design, we're going off a quantity of poles needed to light the area.
So we can get some additional information back to the agency on this, based on the questions that you've raised, and double back with PUD to see where they're at with the demonstration of the fixtures that are available now to do this. So,
hey Spencer, would these poles be managed and maintained by the utility or by the city?
By the utility. That's one of the things that we've been doing is getting out of the light business.
Great. Yeah, I guess the thing for me is knowing that the cost difference of the overall design would sway me towards the Acorn if it has that directional downward, if it turns out to be cheaper.
Okay. Well, we can pull some additional information together on that and bring that back to the agency or council.
Okay, cool. So we'll go with 4D and the last item on the agenda.
Item number 4D is a progress report on electric vehicle charging stations.
Yeah, we've retained Harper, Hoff, Peterson, and Regalis, Inc., which is HHPR, to prepare schematic drawings for the installation of stations at City Hall and the Ernest Black Memorial Wayside. We've also had discussions with ODOT regarding the permit that would be required to extend the electrical across the ODOT right-of-way. And in a meeting with ODOT on November 4th, ODOT said, City, would you like to actually own all that property? They've determined that it's not necessary for any long-term future ODOT uses and would transfer it over to the city. That's a potentially good thing and potentially a bad thing. We have to kind of, we'd be interested to get some comments from the council on that. We do have responsibility for maintaining the improvements on the ODOT right-of-way that were put in as far as the parking lot, and those are restrooms at that location. So it probably wouldn't change our long-term responsibilities for that area. It would certainly potentially accelerate our our process of, well, we wouldn't need an ODOT permit to do what we wanted to do with this as well. So we wanted to have a little brief discussion on that option. And then the third station is for the Oregon Coast Aquarium, and they are planning to install, I believe, two level two chargers in its southern parking lot, the vicinity of the transformers for PUD. And so we will be coordinating with Oregon Coast Aquarium to bring back a reimbursement agreement for the agency to provide financial support for that work that they intend to do. And it'll be coming up to you at a meeting. And we plan to also have an update on December 6th on the have the council determine the best system for EV charging needs at these locations. So those are where we're heading. But I wouldn't mind a little discussion on the ODOT lot or the property that that we have the parking lot on at Block Wayside. See what the council's thoughts are on us pursuing actual acquisition of that property or transfer of that property from the state to the city.
Well, Spencer, I think my first question would be, are we going to be required to pay for with city funds to overlay and stripe that lot?
And I think I'd have to refresh my memory on this, and maybe Derek remembers, but are we responsible for that parking lot?
I don't recall us being responsible for the lot proper. I believe we were responsible for the stormwater management, the water quality facilities that were installed, and the sidewalks. I'd have to go back. We wouldn't typically be responsible for the paved street surfaces.
Because paving's expensive, so I don't want to own that property if we have to pave it. What about the restroom? The city already cleans that, right?
Yeah,
that's ours already.
That's on our property as well. So. Other thoughts?
I don't know if I see a net gain for us to take ownership of that parking area. I mean, if we're already doing the bathrooms, maybe, but I don't see a particular, like, I could go either way on it, essentially.
Yeah.
How much is the permit for ODOT?
So the permit is the reasonable way to go. The side issue has kind of popped up in our discussions with ODOT on the permit. So, and the other thing that we don't know is how long it would take to transfer the property, which
right,
you know, could be a little problematic. I think the permit should be a faster process, and we potentially could pursue the permit and the transfer at a later point too. So if that was something to pursue. But the one thing that we will check, that was built as part of a grant that was a federal grant. And Derek, if we can take a peek at what responsibilities, if any, we have for that parking lot. Because I honestly don't remember. It's been a number of years since we did that. So,
just a quick clarification with respect to the aquarium. So we'll be bringing a reimbursement agreement back to the agency, but the aquarium actually is looking to put in three chargers, three dual ports, so six total. And they've applied for grant funds from the county to match up with what the agency would be reimbursing. That's where they're at right now.
Does anybody have any questions for Derek or Spencer on this agenda item?
These are all level two charging stations. They're not, they're also Tesla friendly, or they're universal kind of chargers?
Yeah, they're level two chargers that we're looking at. And I believe there's a Tesla owner close to me here that says she can charge at those types of chargers. So I think Tesla has an adapter to fit other standard charges.
Correct. It's a universal plug for all of other cars, and then for Tesla, they sell an adapter or give you one that works at a level two. Well, considering the hour, I would call for adjournment of the meeting, the Urban Renewal Agency meeting. Could somebody float a motion?
I move to adjourn the Urban Renewal Agency meeting.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, it looks like we're adjourned at 6 o'clock even. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, just be a few minutes before we start the council meeting. So
yeah, we'll take a 10-minute break. So we'll start at 10 after. As long as Piggy can get it switched in 10 minutes.